All right, so look, it's pretty early in the morning. One, number two is I'm on the tail end of getting well from being sick, so my voice is still out and I'm still kind of a little But this morning I started talking about something about me teaching in another world, which has been something I've been kind of talking about lately, trying to vocalize more about what goes on in my mind and what I do in my kind of spatial time. Trying to give content and feedback instead of not thinking about talking about it. And during this morning's conversation, I was talking about how I had a question kind of posed to me that I thought was a very valid question from this other place I was teaching. In it was the revelation of being a lot of answers also that I thought I could just kind of put all in here. There was also a question in regards to, is a soul transplantable? I noticed on the NAF site, and they had posted a different case, but there was a case that I had seen recently of which I've always said that there's an intelligence in the chest area, and I believe there's other intelligences in the body also, and that they're like cells to the brain that holds information, and that it can hold data. So this person actually had a heart transplant. And he was this really out of shape older guy, at least the data I have, but there's many stories like this. And when he got the heart transplant, he changed his diet to like hardcore healthy. And I'm thinking, well, that's because he had a heart transplant. Of course, I want to have a good diet now, life or death. But he also picked up a lot of other activities and traits and interests in things that were not relative to his lifestyle at all. And it turns out that this other person was a skydiver and a person who does action stuff for movies or whatever, like a stunt guy. And he was very, very active, very, about his diet and ate certain specific foods and everything. And it's as if he got some of the knowledge from this person through that heart transplant. And there's many, many stories where people feel like they know other people. There's a connection, et cetera, so on and so forth. And I thought, it's very interesting because what I'm going to talk about indirectly relates to that information. And I almost don't know which one to kind of talk about more because they're both pretty relevant. But I guess I'll go into that one because I'm talking about it. Some people are saying, well, if the soul is transplantable, yada, 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 I mean, does that split the soul or how can the soul be transplantable from one body to the next body? And it doesn't work that way. It's kind of very similar to what I was saying before. Like, if I go to another world and I move into another consciousness and I communicate or I teach or I talk and stuff, other worlds are very different. There's other dimensions that don't work as organically the same as it does here. It's very different. And then there are other worlds that are very organic, but then there's timelines and how time moves and changes, and it's all like, and it's more like a ball than it is like time as being a tapered process. But that's not what I'm really going to get into right now. My point is this, to just simplify things, which just really opens up Pandora's box, but I'm sure people can ask me about it another time. When I move my consciousness into, let's say, a different body per se, that I'm existing in some other world at the same time, there is the middle pillar. And when people say, well, can you have a soul in more than one place at one time? I would say, yes, you can. But it gets very quantum physical. And again, it's not enough time today to get into all of that. But my point is that your middle pillar can move from one world to the next and move into a frequency that's basically your kind of frequency. And when you move into it, the body or organic bodies or whatever bodies from other worlds, they work very similar in a lot of ways. Data is held in the body. There's the brain. Let's look at it very simplified. The brain stores information, and in many cases, a soul can be derived from the consciousness of the brain where the energy kind of becomes cohesive, as I teach. But in this particular case, what I'm saying is that when you leave your body, you no longer carry the organic interests that the body manifests for you for survival reasons, which become more complicated as the brain becomes more sophisticated or as you evolve. And in essence, boy, this is going to be a really jumpy class. I hope everybody can keep up with me. This is what happens when it's in the morning instead of at night. My point is this. this female had asked me, basically that when you die, whether or not you continue to have the petty issues that you have in life. And my answer was like, no, it doesn't become relative no more. And they were like, well, how is that possible? You know, you carry all this emotional baggage. And I said to her that in some cases, you do. Some people become so transfixed that they make it part of their energy programming, like part of their consciousness. And this is where you get people that are like your entities roaming the earth, that they think that they're still alive, but they're in a dream state. And they're carrying all this emotional baggage from their biological bodies, per se. But I says, most spiritual beings, if they have created a vessel, a soul, when it leaves the body, it's almost immediately you begin to shed a lot of your neurological desires or interests. It's like your basic stuff like hunger. A lot of your eyes, if you had those classes, are instantaneously dropped because they're attached to your organic survival. So, you know, interest in food or interest in physical pleasure or comfort or those things, you can't relate to them no more. There's no connection no more. So it doesn't interfiber into your logic or your process of thinking. It's almost as if by default, you almost literally become this more sophisticated or advanced being or a level of clearer thought through the process of detachment, which you try to practice in your physical life. Hence, you know, why a lot of spiritual teachers will say detachment. When you die, like I said before, you can't take your girlfriend, you can't take your boyfriend, you can't take your car, you can't take your money, you can't take your clothing, you can't take your jewelry, you can't take all these things, but they're all really attachments through your programming as a human being for a sense of survival or comfort, which in many cases have grossly gotten out of control through modern age and economy and everything else. So in essence, you become more truer to an identity of consciousness because you no longer identify with lower needs of relating what you are or who you think you are based upon the objects that you possess or you own. You no longer identify or can identify yourself by the clothing you wear or the name tags you have or the jewelry that represents, you know, I'm machismo or I'm spiritual or I'm, you know, into classical things. You no longer have those things, nor do you really have an interest because a lot of those things are biologically connected somehow to identify into your security as a human being. So when you die, almost like 60% of how you identify with yourself is literally shed like an onion peeling its skin, literally in the process of your death scenario. You let go of a lot of your identification as to who and what you are by default. And of course, a lot of this also is your attachment to other human beings. Now, a lot of people might say, well, that's kind of sad. Don't you think that you still love a person? It's just that you realize, and I've said this in many classes before, there's not this real sense of attachment no longer in the same sense. It's more, instead of saying, I'm leaving you, I'll never get to see you again, your whole idea of time and space changes very dramatically, your relationship with it. It's almost as if you're just leaving to go down the road. You don't think twice about saying bye to somebody. But that person can't relate to it because biologically there's all these neurological attachments and flooding of chemicals in your body. But that person no longer has that. Or at least it's detaching very rapidly. So spiritually, you evolve to a much more pristine, higher level. And you reflect back to all these peculiar over emotional sensations. I would do it this way so you can relate more. When you're a child, you have higher levels of chemicals that make you much more emotional, or you tend to cry more, or you become more empathetically involved with stuff emotionally. And even as you grow older and that starts to change, and you almost laugh at yourself, like how you feel just so compulsed to cry for no reason and stuff. And as you grow older, would you say that you're more evolved than you were emotionally, and that it was silly that you'd get upset or angry or feel neglected or unloved or pushed away, that you think that it was silly as you got older because you think you were overreacting? It is exactly what happens, but on a much more profound level, as you detach from your biological body. It's like you see these wanting feelings as being almost pushed on you, but you can't relate to that as no more than you can as a child, because it just feels very real until you see it from a higher evolved level, and you see that perspective as you begin to be able to separate that chemical drive versus your intellectual drive as to how you truly identify yourself. You can begin to separate that difference. So spiritually, you become a higher evolution as you leave your body. You detach from all these things that you identify in. You know, everything holds us into place. You know, the things that embarrass us or shame us, the things that bring us joy, the things that you know, these are all identifiable things that you create how you respond, or your limitations to how you can perceive yourself or react to things, or the amount of pleasure you can take in life. It's based upon your perception of yourself identified through those things. I mean, one could say that you could be having a wonderful time doing something publicly, but if you let one fart out of your ass, you're crushed, you withdraw. But in reality, it's a normal biological thing that happens to everybody, but you feel this daunting massive embarrassment that overwhelms your body. And I hate to use something like that, but it's the only way to get a shock or a rise out of somebody. But it's these kind of things that whole, when in truth, if you were really evolved, you'd kind of be like, what are you going to do? Move on. Should it steal from your life from that moment? No, it shouldn't. But these are things but as a child, everything is like that. You could do something and then all of a sudden you withdraw because you feel, that's how you're going to feel as you evolve spiritually. In fact, as you grow older, much of the times you identify and you begin to detach still in layers as you mature. It's just that the biggest one of detachment is when you finally reach that level of death. So spiritually, when you hear spiritual masters talk about detachment, the reason why they talk about detachment is to help you understand that you need to find out who you really are, who your consciousness truly is, and that by letting go, in your mind at least, of what you identify as to what you are, or that you see how irrelevant these things truly are, that you can only find yourself, and that through detachment you become closer to God or closer to your spirituality, because it's almost like everything that you think you are, or that you attach yourself to, or you identify yourself, or the more plastic you become, it's like creating a wall between you and the force, or you and the universe, and that you lose your relationship with God and the universe by doing and allowing yourself to automate into these objects, into these things. So having a conscientious effort when you go to meditate and to say, today or this week, you know, or once a month, I work on detachment and I try to mentally let go, instead of cutting the cords on other people that may be attached to you when you do your sword, perhaps maybe you think of objects to loosen that connection to them. Even a laptop computer, I see people obsessed with them. I see people obsessed with sneakers. I see people obsessed with athletics. I see people obsessed with even spiritual things, you know? Sometimes, you know, you need to have different kinds of detachments so that you can make sure that this is not what you've become. So maybe by cutting them is a way of psychologically loosening that bond. It doesn't mean I'm saying throw them all away. I'm saying that there is something in your spiritual center that feels relieved when you open up byways now, or clear an opening in the plastic, is what I call it, to let through to the universe. Or that you say once a month, regularly, I have to think about this, because one forgets about how much plastic is around them because it becomes them. It's like when you put your clothing on, you may think about what you're wearing, but once you step out the door, you're no longer thinking about that. You've simply become this identified person for the day. So that is what detachment is about. And detachment can run into many different things and many different classifications. I'm not saying that one should not look at money and say, well, I have to become detached from money. Look, I believe that you should create a shelter for yourself so that you can be comfortable, which means a home. A home means you need to have finances in order to create that. I think that one should work on their health and their happiness. I think that you should have one foot in life and one foot in your spirituality. The point to emphasizing detachment is that most people by default will definitely get their right foot very far into the physicalness, and their foot tends to slide always from their spiritualness. So by emphasizing detachment, I don't think you could ever take your foot out of the physicalness fully. So it'll always be there no matter how hard you pull it out, unless you can find a mountain in a cave, and you that won't go over well after a month. Anyway, the point is that, you know, is to cut all that, but you'll still have it, but it helps you get your foot very centered in your spirituality just by the action of acknowledging those things and recognizing them is where the power comes. Is to say, do you know, how much do I identify with these things as being me? So again, moving from that detachment back to again, jumping all over, I told you it was going to be an odd class, to where the biological heart, you know, where it's transplanted, it goes into the simple fact of saying that when I move my mind into another body, my middle pillar per se, that, you know, it would not be fear that if I said, well, let me teach you about detachment and explain it from the perspective, or let me tell you from the same words, I couldn't, because you can't identify to, it's like another language, it's another culture, dramatically different. And oftentimes, you know, I stutter, or oftentimes I jumble up my words. And, you know, the truth to be told is because sometimes I jump around from all these places, I think I get my brain all scattered. And it's sometimes hard to put it together with, you know, how I translate things. But in essence, when you move into these other bodies, it's to say that, you know, I may not be able to recall 100% of the language or identifications from these other worlds, because I don't necessarily pull that data with me. And when you're in that body, somehow it makes perfect sense how you communicate and how you see things, but that's because of the biological data that's contained in it. It's like when you move your consciousness in it, you hardwire into those cells that hold all of the information from that world, whether it be language or emotional data, physical data. I mean, physical data, in my opinion, is emotional data. I've taught you guys about tagging. Everything has a feels like. It's no different anywhere else in the universe. So you don't necessarily carry that data in your middle pillar, because you couldn't function in other worlds if you crisscross so much. So you almost leave that data so you can operate in this one. So when you move into this vessel, you plug into that information source, which is stored in that body, and then you kind of find a way to communicate, or that it what is the word I'm looking for? It kind of interfibers with your data, so it becomes one, so that it makes sense. You there's a word for it in science here, I forget what it's called, but so this is when, you know, when you take hearts, and I find it interesting, and you transplant that data into another body, you're getting some of that data, but you're making it into a third, so it becomes your own. Do you know what I'm saying? It doesn't necessarily mean your soul is in there. It's not. It's just data that's stored organically, and then it wires into your process. So again, when you have detachment, a lot of that stuff is the stuff that you let go of, ironically. And so this is where this all came in, is through the detachment and the cell structure. Does it make sense? That a lot of that is organic, relative, emotional, or identification. And when you leave your body, you don't really carry that with you. I mean, you can draw on the knowledge of it, but you no longer identify with it as much. It only can work for you if you have the machinery to operate it. Do you get what I'm saying? So you lose that machinery when you move out of your body, and it's a good thing, because you really can identify with what and who you are, and that's what makes you into a higher being. But also in the same token, it is your experiences here that make you a richer being. Do you know? Often, you know, I would think that the next question, at least if I was a student, I would ask is that then what are the kind of things that I would take with me when I leave this world? And I would say they are the richest moments of what bring you the greatest pleasure in life. It's the identification to maybe a child that you've given birth to, or that so there's this connection to another life form. There are moments when you see sunrises and sunsets, and you see life. These are the epiphany moments, the cream of that moment. You know, there was something once I read by God, I forget everything, especially when I start talking about this stuff. My main memory dumps because my mind wants to move into the. Carl Jung, brilliant. Carl Jung once said that when he got really old, he says, "What is it that you remember?" He says, "You don't remember people's names as much. You don't remember certain specific things." But he says the things you remember are like the moment that he says when he was a child, they lived in this house near this big hill or something, and he says that his father woke him up early, extra early, and he brought him out, and it was still dark out, and the sun was coming up or something, and the sun lit up like this whole area, and it was, he says it was so beautiful, it's so amazing. He says that's what he remembers in his old age, is everything else is feeling in his mind. It's those absolute pivotal moments that are what I call universal moments, that this is what enriches the soul. Do you see what I'm saying? Obviously, he clearly remembered being woken up by his father. He remembered the house and stuff. But you know, he may not remember names of people. You're not gonna remember who you had a cocktail with at certain things. But it's the most richest moments. And this is a collection in your life that this is part of the reason why you journey here. It's also to help civilization, help worlds, and to help souls be created to enrich in the universe. But at the same token, your personal journey, okay, is about enriching your soul. And what it comes down to is those moments aren't the moments about the objects you own. It's not about what you think you are. It's really always detached moments. It's about the moments where they are just really life-filled. And those are the things that will richen in the architecture of your dimensional consciousness to move through the universe and allow you to move into higher planes and move towards what I call the absolute to godness, that God has embodied these things, and that's the richness of the totality of his frequency. So you're adding more complexities to the richness of your vibration, and that's what allows you to match tones per se to move into the presence of God or move closer to that presence that you seek to find. So, I hope that was what I wanted to talk about. So, I would say to people that if you guys were going to work on something, you know, it's one thing to work in your meditations, but if you want to reach a higher level of your spiritualness, a higher level of enlightenment, or you want to cut out the dough, or you want to empower, because you know it's you know, I says it's 2012, and I hate bringing that in, but you know that there would be a point where you can become very spiritual, or you're going to become very compounded by the fear. That by thinking about detachment now and putting that into your practice, okay, is going to raise your spiritualness. It's going to make you mightier. It's going to make you closer to enlightenment. That the more that you can bring in detachment into your consciousness and your understanding, the more that you're going to evolve spiritually. And that it's something that's going to enrichen your meditations dramatically. So that's what I have to say on that. Was that my phone that did that, or was that a different phone? It sounded pretty loud by me, so I'm pretty sure I think it's me. No, it wasn't me. Who's the jerk that left their phone on? Anyway. See, you want to see the power of detachment? I'm attached to this, so I'm just going to fling it away. Not. Okay. But, you know, this is again, so. Somehow this all goes full circle to this other world that I was teaching in recently, and this question that was posed to me is that when you leave your body, a lot of the stuff that you think is who you are, you're going to leave behind. And that if you want to evolve to a higher state when you leave your body, the more that you can implement and understand detachment, the more that you become part of this higher state of consciousness. Another way to look at it is this. I often say, you know, God is not a man and is not a woman, but yet it's both polarities. And that if you can look at your way that you identify yourself, am I a man or am I a woman, and move kind of beyond that, that's a way to grow closer to become a spiritual being. If you look at most spiritual masters, you'll notice that they're a blend of almost feminine and masculine energy. There's a very nurturing, loving part of them, but there's a powerful part of them. And that's a balance. That's the universe. There's a harmonic. And that the same token goes that if you can understand that it helps you evolve in your physical life, this now, to evolve to a higher place. Because the more that you can separate to what you think you are as a human being, the more that you can move past that, the more that God consciousness can move in you, it can come alive in you. Again, my point is that by the concept is that if you can, in your mind, you get it, that there's this balance, that when that moment happens within the months, you evolve to a higher level, like everything you begin to see and understand. Music sounds more beautiful and richer. Trees seem more lively and more colorful. Paintings seem more expressive. That it's almost like a veil is peeled away that you were looking through that made everything look a little bit less filtered, but you never knew it. It's like regular TV and HD. Life, when your mind gets that epiphany moment, you know, that you understand the concept that I'm saying, that it slowly peels it away, or it's like more like a lens. It starts to tune in over months. You do leaps in those months compared to what you've done in 20 years of your life. And this is what makes your spiritual vibration get stronger. And when I say that if you can understand detachment and you can put it into practice, it's again one of those lenses where it peels away, and how you understand things, how you move through the universe, how you can all of a sudden let your mind. There is a correlation between moving your mind outward and detachment. I think detachment keeps your mind contained in the body. And that understanding detachment somehow moves the objects that seems to be like glue that holds your mind in. That understanding detachment, and when you put it into practice emotionally, consciously, you can't just say you understand it. This is why it takes months. It's something that evolves and changes in you, that you kind of go, you know, once in a while you think about your attachment, and that's what begins to break that blockage up. That you evolve, and then your understanding of your mind becomes richer. It's your mind can move more. It's not so locked into place by what's structured around it, saying this is what you are. You can't move past these things. That it's funny that the little things that are connected to you could have such profound things spiritually. So it's through detachment, I think, that your mind can breathe and it can move to these monumental levels. And this is why it's critically important. If you overdo detachment and you say, well, I don't need my clothing, I don't need my house, I'm going to live in the jungle, and I know people like this, you have lost the reason to be here. You're here to integrate with life. But, you know, you remember, build your life around your spirituality, not your spirituality around your life. You don't want to lose your connection with the world, but you don't want the world to crystallize you. And that in itself becomes the you know, the whole purpose of it. any questions?
Yeah. So in that process of, as you evolve, you let go of certain things in your life, kind of like a child lets go of things as he goes into adulthood.
Right, but keep in mind, you don't really recognize, well, you recognize it at one moment. What you guys are doing is you're purposely recognizing it. You see, as a child, it happens naturally as you mature. As you grow older people, you notice they don't get upset as easy. especially elderly people, they're just like, you know, they always say they're happier. It's true. Most elderly people are happier when they're younger. Not all, but most. But there's a maturity. But what I'm saying to you is that you by me pointing this out to you is giving you a 20, 40, 60, 70 year advantage that you can have now. Do you understand? I often say that biologically, it's just like you see masculine people as they grow older become more feminine, they balance, and more feminine women, you know, like elderly women will become more masculine because after they go through their menstrual cycle, well, not menstrual cycle, but their menopause, there's a change. They get their power in women. It's almost as if nature is trying to prepare them to blossom into the universe. It's like balancing them naturally, okay? But what you're trying to do and have an understanding is to make that progression happen much sooner if you can get it. Let me do that again. I need to get it. You know what I'm saying? If you can understand that, you empower yourself faster. But anyway, I'm sorry I cut you off.
That's awesome. The question I have is, okay, on the reverse cycle, what is it about either a newborn, or does a soul incarnate into a body during the middle of its life cycle, and some aspect of that body's evolution attracts a middle pillar, kind of like you said, a middle pillar can be
when you're saying in other worlds, you mean?
Just at the moment of the middle pillar moving into a body, being attracted to it, does that happen always right at the...
Well, it's very important that you understand is that a middle pillar first has to begin in one being. Once you reach a level of enlightenment, or a level of a higher level of spiritualness, because enlightenment is a broad level, okay? You create that middle pillar. You have to get advanced enough that you can understand it. Everybody here has definitely got a middle pillar, okay? I mean, there's some people working on their millipedal more so than some of you guys more advanced. The point is that in order to exist in other worlds, your middle pillar then goes to other worlds and it moves into another birth cycle. Do you understand? And you start another body, but you're like coexisting spiritually. So you don't go to another world and find somebody who's ready to let your middle pillar go into a red cell. So I don't know if I'm understanding you correctly.
A lot of people think that right before they birth in, that there's this moment where they choose who they're going to be in that world.
Well, that's true too, if you've already gotten past the first stage of creating your soul. Do you understand? You have to create a soul and then die, and then you go to another world. But if you get really, after you've done enough lives like this and you've matured spiritually, your mind then will wander to other lives. Usually you won't go in the same world because there's a kind of resistance, like magnets. You kind of know that you already get into, but there's a certain thing in the universe that wants exploration. And when you become more godlike, you know, connected to God, do you see what I'm saying? There's this wanting to understand more, to enrich in yourself. So your mind, especially in a sleep state, is allows you to move on a broader level to other worlds, and that's where you might then choose another body to incarnate into, but you fracture your vibration. And then it's like a webbing. It's like a neuralness to your mind. I know it's hard for you guys to understand in your understanding, but in your mind, you're multiple places in your consciousness. It's just an exterior version.
So kind of the direction that your soul, as you continue to develop it in that life, the direction that your soul is going to take is determined during that life. Like during your current life right now, your mind kind of goes over and travels different places, like you're saying.
Once you're advanced enough
in your growth, then that's what kind of attracts or pulls you at the moment of death or something. You start migrating over to that other area.
Right. You have a dominant one, you know, like I think it's more or less where you dominate most of the time. But, you know, I would say this, I shouldn't say this. When I'm Eric, my middle pillar is probably somewhere else. And when I'm more in the spiritual place, then I'm more dominant middle pillar here. Do you understand? I don't know if that makes sense or not. On the same token, it's also to say, to help you guys understand something that must sound very confusing to you guys, is which you are you now? Which I are you now? Do you understand? It's no different in how you move in your... If you go to work and you've got your work eye, or you've got the eye that you have to deal with other people, is that really the same person I'm talking to right here, right now? You are a fraction, biologically that memory is there, but are you really present in that middle pillar? You're more in your middle pillar now because we're all frequent. It's like a pitch. My pitch is, and you're trying to match it. It's like that tone pitches are matching. Like my tone is vibrating, so I'm pulling your middle pillars out. Do you see what I'm saying? If my middle pillar changes or I'm not around, your middle pillar will withdraw, and then you have to deal with the world. So you take on whatever forms, unless you find a way to resonate it inside of you to bring it out. This is why you put things into practice to make it stronger and stronger. But you know, for me, it's where in other worlds, like when you guys switch your personalities to cope with the outside world or to do whatever you're doing, it's no different than for me to move from one world to the other world. It's just an exterior version versus an interior version. Does that make sense?
Yeah. When you're saying other worlds, what are you referring to?
Other planets, other solar systems, other galaxies, other dimensions that have other kind of life forms and other spatial places. I will say that often you cannot splice or shift into too many places that are very foreign biologically. In other words, I mean, it's less likely that I'm going to let my mind move into other, like be a big giant octopus creature or something. It's more human-like in some ways. It's more relative to what you're working in that kind of place. It's a whole nother conversation. Any other questions? And it's a wrap, I think. If you ain't got nothing, bring it on.
So when you practice detachment, wouldn't it, if you got like good at it, wouldn't it take away the passion that kind of feeds your soul?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And from a woman, she would get it. And it's an excellent question. And I wanted to talk about that, but you know, my mind jumps to other things. You know, it is and it isn't. Let me explain it differently in terms. Let me find my feminine side to maybe find a different way to explain it. Have you ever been so happy and in love that you couldn't express it? Like you feel it internally and it's just so beautiful. It can move you to tears, but you're so happy. But it's like something inside of you. It's like that. Instead of being more like trying to channel it through like, oh, let me, you don't, it's more like you're just sitting there and you just, it's like watching that sunrise on the mountain. It's not something that you're interacting with other people or you're holding something or you're hugging something. It's more that something that's an explosion of awareness by an observation, but you don't need that observation no more once you've experienced it. You just feel it. You have these intense emotions, but they're more pure. Does that make sense? I think that there are biological emotional experiences that you can recognize. Like, like I'm not going to cry, and you're crying, and you're like, I told myself not to cry, but you can feel that argument inside of you. Versus other times where you're so happy and you're so blissful, either spiritually or emotionally, or when you feel like the presence of God come in you. Okay, have you ever like felt so loved at a moment, or felt so spiritual at a moment that it's not something that you can look at in the second person in a sense? It's just like it's just so you at that moment. It's so big that it fills you up that you can't even look at yourself because you're so in it. Does that make sense? That it's a very hard to define difference, but they're very dramatically different. Does that help at all?
Yeah. I mean, and the yes, and then like my other question would be like, if you're like say an artist, like,
yep.
Like my dad and his passion is to paint. And,
right.
But if you were to practice right. Detachment, wouldn't it right. Take away that?
No, 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 it doesn't. It's he would see a much more deeper level to his art. It would just go to a different level. It would go to a level of boy, how can I explain this? There's a level of beauty that you can see on the surface of something. And then there's a level of beauty that you want to get in that popping moment. Like I'm looking out at the flowers and you can look at the tree and you can go, that's beautiful. But what would be more beautiful is not to see it as it sees now. You can go, wow, it would be the moment that you could capture it coming to life, the birth of a budding flower. That in that moment of popping, there is a moment of deeper expression coming from it rather than the moment of here's the presentation. It's more the moment of progress, of opening. It's a richer level of definement. You know, it goes back to the moment of, haven't you ever looked at stuff or there are stuff as a child you appreciate. And then as you grow older, you look back and you go, I never got that before, but now I get it. Like I never understood that really before. And when I looked at it, I was always like, oh yeah, but now I understand. It's like now I really get what that really means. I'm trying to think, there's stuff that, you know, I mean, everybody must do that. Isn't there stuff that you didn't get before? And then all of a sudden one minute you look at it and you go, oh my God, now I finally get it. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm trying to. Well, physical, because that's what you can relate to at the moment. And I can translate that into something more emotional. What I'm saying is that your sense of understanding gets on a much richer level. It's like to a level that you could never have brought it to before. Do you understand? Like, hasn't your artwork progressed personally?
Yes.
Okay. How do you know the difference that it's progressed? Did you not think that was the most amazing stuff when you were doing it?
Yeah.
Did it not mean something to you then? Mm-hmm. If you would see what you're doing now, would have it meant as much to you now, a piece of artwork, to the level that you could have understood it then? Yes, you couldn't have. I mean, you would have looked at it, you would have said, that's nice, but you couldn't, there's something inside of you that couldn't perceive it. It couldn't see inside of that piece of art. Only somebody that has the experience could see the fucking mastery of it. Do you understand? That's when you have detachment, you see the truest level of what brilliance is behind something. It's a kind of instant maturity. Or it speeds up your maturity level of what is amazing. You could say, well, doesn't it make everything else less amazing? It does, but it opens you up to a higher truth of greater amazement that you begin to be able to move into. Do you understand? Now somebody might say, well, maybe I want those levels of experiences. Well, you still get them. You still get them. It's just that your maturity changes in the sense of how you can perceive things. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Does that make sense for everybody? Yeah, it was a tough one to figure out, but a girl will understand that better than a guy at first, I think. They're more sophisticated in that way. And I think that's how I see things. And I think that's why, you know, I'm also very honest when I say, oh, well, you know, yeah, I can't fib, you know? It's like it's just so clear to me. You know, but your perception of things changes. It's more like you live in the deeper level of the now than in like this other state. I know I prefer it mostly, but you know, let me explain something else to you. As long as you're in a biological body, you will always get both. That it's harder to be in the place that I'm talking about, detached. Because you will always become unattached. Detachment is always maintenance. As long as you're in a physical body, it's like manicuring a beautiful lawn. You can make it look very beautiful. That takes work. But if you neglect it, what happens?
It
none turns to crap. It turns to a different level of beauty.
Right.
It turns to what nature intended, okay? But did nature plant the tree in that spot or this tree? So it can get out of control and still beautiful. But maybe nature wouldn't have brought that Japanese apple tree to this field because you're in another country. You did. But nature will take the progress of letting it be what it was supposed to be. But you interact and you can make it into this other, more, you know, different kind of beauty. Do you see what I'm saying? Well, one would say that, well, isn't that kind of control? Don't you want natural beauty? And I would say, well, God is an intelligence. God created the universe. Is that not a controlled beauty? Do you understand? That there has to be an integration, a dance between the two.
So you're saying by detachment, you would see the beauty in that overgrowth.
You'd see both. This is the beauty of it. You see it all. Where you couldn't see the other beauty, you can then see it. It's just like, you will always get pulled into this world because by default, if you don't maintain the work in your spiritualness, do you see what I'm saying? As long as you're in this dimension, if you neglect it, it will revert, and then it's work to kind of get it back organized. Does that make sense? So you get the best of both because you'll always neglect. It's I do it. I mean, I'm pretty advanced and I'm like, shit, I haven't been working on myself lately. But the beauty is you can organize it faster because you remember the process of how to do it and you learn each time. So even if you neglect, you can go, well, you know what? I know what I need. It's not like I need to get the manual out to try to remember how to do it. I've done it so many times, I can get it back under control very quickly. This is why I always say I can screw off more than you guys. Because I can get my A game back on faster. So. Does that all make sense? You guys get it?
Definitely.
Anything else?
Yeah, there's one thing I want to ring a bell.
Oh, yeah. Ring a bell.
Well, we're talking about doing things in this world for the force.
Yeah.
And if you look at your eyes and, you know, how it craves for sugar and, you know, those, you know, everything in sex, everything that's physical for the body is what it craves for. How do you bridge that to working for the force and having that same drive as you have to get security or sugar, things like that?
Right, right.
I mean, how does that all work? I mean, you could say that, you know, recently we talked about a student, you know, and I said, well, he doesn't have any motivation from this material world. You know, it must be the force. I mean, how does that come through? The body, that motivation to drive yourself to work for the force and you know, dedicate yourself to the force without wanting sugar, if that made sense, you know?
Well, but this is where all of your practices are tools. And if you don't put it into practice, then you lose that thing. It's all maintenance. And if you neglect something, you're going to let it go to shit. I mean, if you neglect grooming your hair and brushing your teeth, you're not going to have good teeth and you're going to have bad hair, you know, matter of opinion. But if you don't maintain things or put forth some kind of effort, you lose it. But if you put enough effort, eventually you get to the point where you don't think about that effort no more. It just becomes your present state and it's just part of your process. You forget, you get lazy, you change. You change your hairstyle over time, you change your clothing style in time, your personality grows and enriches with age. Your spirituality is going to probably change also, so you have to adapt with that and you have to put certain things into practice, but it will adapt with you if you work with it. But if you don't put any effort, I keep talking about this. I've said before, and this is an old teaching, you know, that when you go to bed at night, it's like rain. A certain kind of rain comes down, and it's called effort. You guys remember the class? And everybody gets only a certain amount of it for spirituality. It's almost enough to make you have enough substance to exist. And that if you want more of it, you've got to convert that into your meditation. And if you meditate and you work on doing the things that you've been taught and you put them into action, you'll start to collect more of this pranic kind of energy, and it will motivate you more. To eventually you get it so strong again that you don't think about it no more. It just becomes, you become this spiritual juggernaut. You become just very empowered. When I teach, the pranic comes to me. You can almost see it in me. I have to almost warm up. But what you don't see is this pranic energy moving into me. And it's what feeds me. It's like draws me. There's a reciprocation. The universe acknowledges that I'm doing something spiritual by feeding you guys, by teaching you guys. So it's like a tree. The tree sees the deer eat the fruit, and it says, ah, if I make a better fruit, it'll eat more, and it will bring my offspring and shit it out in the woods, and then the plants will grow my offspring. The universe says, Eric's teaching, he's giving my energy to other people, and I need to give more to Eric so that he can give more to other people. Do you understand? So pranically, there's always this relationship. This is a universal truth. So if you want to have your spirituality, you must fight for it. It is a struggle, okay? and that Gaia is going to do what Gaia does. It's going to grow the forest over you. It's going to trees will grow so big that the little trees can't find the sun no more. It'll push out the weak for the stronger, okay? If you want to become the dominant, you must push for your spirituality to fight to get the most light, to get the most energy so that you can give forth in the universe what you have to. This is the nature of the universe. That if you fall asleep too much or you do not find detachment, you will fall asleep and you will become part of the machine. Do you understand? That if you think that there has to be this moment where something's just going to motivate me or it's just going to happen for me, no, you're weak. You're going to fall asleep and you're going to be forgotten. You're just going to live and die and you will become part of this life process on this planet. Or you will fight for your sunlight. You will fight for your spiritual growth and you will give your fruits out. And you will prolificate in the universe just like a species of plant will prolificate in the forest. You have to decide. The universe will give you enough prana, but it can't give it all to you. You have to ask for it. The universe will not push itself on you. You have to ask the universe to come to you. If you don't ask, it's not going to bully you and say you have to do it. So I always am amused by people that you know, whoever is very spiritual and you go, wow, how do they do it? They do it because they get up every day and they apply themselves. And then now it becomes effortless. There's always a little bit of effort, okay? But it's easier. It's almost like a glide thing, like a swing. The first push is hardest. The second is a little hardest. But once the momentum's going, you just got to give a little energy and it moves. The people who have fallen asleep have lost their momentum. Give it a big enough push and you will find how easy it returns, how natural it becomes. Everybody here, universal truth. If you haven't meditated for a week or a month or several, but do you understand what I'm saying? So you've got to fight. That is your one piece, your one chance that said, God said, jumped into your moment of your life and grabbed you and said, remember me. And then all of a sudden started to fade and said, remember me, remember me, remember me. And you're like, oh, Sally, pass me the coffee. What do we got to do today? You know, this is the universe jumping in and saying, let me give you one fighting chance. Let me come into your dream and inspire you, make you feel me. When you wake up in the morning, find me. And then what do? That's a choice. You make that choice. How many times has the universe tried to reach back into your life? How many times has it fought to bring you back? And then you either dismiss it or you go, I'm going to hang on to this. And if you can just do two or three meditations, you'll probably get a good gription. This is why I say the feathers belong on a wing. If you do not unite yourselves, if you do not say, let's meditate, let's work together, let's do something spiritual together, you feed one another. This is where your strength comes from. The dark side will split you apart. And when you're on your own, you can only last so long unless you're the strongest of the strong. And there's no shame. If you use pride to think, I can survive on my own right now, you will feel. Even the master gathers. What do? I gather. Where do I get my strength from? I teach. I keep my students around me. Do you understand? Now, I think I can find spirituality out in the forest and I can get very rich with it. But then I disconnect from feeding the fruit to the forest. Do you understand? The universe says, oh, let's work on you alone. But when you isolate too much, you're no longer giving either. Do you understand? One foot in, one foot out. So You have to use one another to inspire you. You can't just all say, oh, on 12 o'clock noon, we're going to meditate. You know why? Because the meditation becomes machine-like. Go to the park and meditate. Change it up. Go and do something spiritual, whether it's something completely different. Go to a haunting. Go to if you've done it all and you're bored, find something new to inspire you. If you don't, you will fall asleep. And when the time you wake up in your spiritualness, you'll go, oh, it's been 3 years. Oh, it's been 5 years. Oh, it's 20 years now. I've only wakened 3-4 times. My time here is almost gone. Have I done what I've come here to do? Have you stayed awakened long enough? Only the strongest will survive here. only the strongest. And you can either bloom or you can fade away. And it is your choice. The universe will not bully you to stay in or out. It is your teacher's job to inspire you. This is what I'm trying. I'm trying to reach out and inspire you. That's my job. It's like to say, what does the shepherd do for the priest? Or what does the Buddhist monk do for the it is that's the job. But you have to remember, the teacher may not always be there. So the teacher must withdraw silently and watch and observe if the student is trying to help themselves. And those are the ones that the teacher watches and says, this one is special. Now that they've starved enough on their own and they hung in there, I'm going to intervene and put something very impactful in their life, because those are the strong ones. The ones that can go out to sea on their own the furthest, the osprey per se or whatever, those are the ones you want to put the strength into, because those are the ones that are going to move into the future the furthest. They're going to do the greatest work. The ones that keep falling off the floor and have to be picked up all the time, I ain't got all the time to babysit. I ain't got no time to wipe the asses and wipe the mouth and stuff and baby spoon feed. Show me what you got. Show me why you deserve the armaments that I can give you. Because I only got so many armaments to give. Who do I give to? So this is what it's about. The universe every night will give you a certain amount of prana. It is up to you to decide if you will waste it or if you will utilize it. You must go to your comrades and you must inspire them. You must find gatherings. You must work with one another. You must do stuff that, and it will come to you. God will move upon you so swiftly, it will knock you on your ass if you simply open your heart to it. That's it. Does that answer your question, Bard?
Yeah, it does. Thank you.
Anything else, folks? Good. It's a wrap.